What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Live Podcast. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Graham, alongside the Fantasy Viper, Graham Barfield. Michael Fabiano is off being famous over with Rich Eisen right now. So, yeah.
Well, it's the perks of just no one knowing who we are, so.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Anonymity, man. It has its benefits.
It's fantastic. It does.
I want to start, actually, I had a very fun weekend. If you follow me on Twitter, you saw that I had the good fortune to be invited to Canton, Ohio for the King's Classic Draft, the second edition of it. A lot of fun. I did a 14-team auction, which I can say is the first time I've ever done one of those.
Yeah.
It's a beast.
It has to be, man. Like, auction drafts are actually my favorite way of drafting. I just think there's so much more game theory, and everyone has access to the whole player pool. I just think it makes for just a better draft experience. But 14 teams, that's a complete bear.
It is an absolute beast. It was a lot of fun. We'll have Mike Tagliere from Fantasy Pros coming on a little bit later. He and I were there together, sitting next to each other on one of the couches there. But I also want to just give a shout-out to Bob Lung at Big Guy Fantasy Sports, Brad Evans over at Yahoo. They are the two masterminds behind this King's Classic. And like I said, through 2 years, it's been a lot of fun. It has become kind of a fun networking event as well. It was nice to meet people that I only knew via Twitter, or just meet folks that I had never met before. It was a lot of fun. And a huge thanks to the folks at the Pro Football Hall of Fame for letting a bunch of nerds come and crash there for several hours and do fantasy drafts. It was fun. We were in a room. It's like an all glass room, really nice lounge area. And the museum's open, so people are like walking by. And I think people kind of peered in thinking that we were like Hall of Fame voters or whatever. Like, and then we were like, oh no, we're doing a fantasy draft. The result, and the response kind of like, and they just kept it moving. so that was it. But it was a lot of fun. It was definitely a lot of fun. So there you go. We got plenty to talk about. Mike Tagliere, as I mentioned, will join us. Mike Florio will stop by
join us.
I know, it's like Mike and Mike. That's another network, though, huh? It's not anymore. I don't even think that show exists.
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
But anyway, Mike and Mike will stop by. They will talk. We will also talk about things that are pumpkin spiced because, well, I don't know, just because. So there you go. We are currently in stage 5, which you may know if you have seen us do our fantasy live shows on the internet in the preseason. So we're not in our normal studio. Senior Edward L. Murphy Esquire is still in points unknown. I think New York. Never heard of it. Anyway, so Steve Manning once again is on the boards. He can't talk to us, but wave, Steve. There, he's waving. You can't see him because it's a podcast, but just trust me, he's waving.
Is that how that works?
That's how that works, man. It is not a visual medium. So now that I've rambled for a whole long time, let's do some news.
Through the news.
All right. So this happened as we were just getting ready to begin our draft at the King's Classic, which actually is the second year in a row that Josh Gordon has been reinstated right before that draft. It's become a tradition unlike any other. Graham, I know you said last week that if Josh Gordon came back, that you're back in on him. So I assume.
Oh, man. I've been back in. I never left.
So okay, you're back in. So where are you back in? Like what round, what area are you looking to draft?
That's the crux. And I haven't done any drafts worth like actual any jelly beans since Gordon has been reinstated. So I haven't had to fire any live bullets yet. But I think right now is like 6th, 7th round feels right to me. I mean, he's probably going to get suspended. He's probably minimum going to get a 2-game suspension.
Right.
We're kind of waiting for the league to come back on that. But people don't realize that, like, yes, it was only 70 targets he saw last year, but he posted a career high in yards per target. Posted a career-high catch rate. His passer rating when targeted was the highest of his career, better than his 2013 season with the Browns. Josh Gordon's not going to be pummeled with targets like he was in 2013. He does not have 170-target ceiling in this offense. But 110 is very achievable with their just wide-open pass-catcher corps. N'Keal Harry has started slow and kind of been banged up. Julian Edelman's been out of camp. It's still a really good spot for Gordon.
I have seen such a wide range in where he's coming off the board. I've seen in one draft him come off the board in the 5th round. I've seen in another draft that I did last night with some friends where he didn't go until like the 12th round.
Well, let's go through it. So 6th round, right, is like Allen Robinson, Calvin Ridley, Robbie Anderson. who do you out of that grouping, like, that feels right to me, because yeah. Gordon has that like receiver two ceiling,
right?
But obviously he's, you know, taking more time away from football. He's been out of Patriots camp. He's going to get suspended
potentially. The other part of it is, and this was a wrinkle that came up over the weekend, he could end up on the NFI list, the non-football injury list. If that happens going into the season, it works sort of like the PUP list, where that means he's not available to you until after week six. And so I guess to look at him in the fifth or sixth round and have that hanging over your head that you might have to hold on to him for 6 or 7 weeks, that to me makes me a little nervous, which sure. is why I guess I feel comfortable. 12 seems a little late, but maybe, you know, 8 or 9, just because of that risk. But I'm also kind of risk averse when it comes to these sorts of things. But I do think it's funny because, you know, I would say it's like a Pavlovian response for fantasy Twitter when Josh Gordon's name comes up.
Well, it is for me, absolutely. No, I'll say, too, that's a good point about risk management, because it just depends on your team build, right? It's like, if Gordon is your receiver 4 in the 6th or 7th round, that's fine. But if you started running back heavy, or you got O.J. Howard in the 5th round, and he's your second receiver, that's not necessarily a spot I want to have.
Right. News out of Dallas? Jerry Jones, after watching Tony Pollard have another good week, came out and, talking to reporters, said, Zeke who? Look, I mean, I know it was sort of a joke, and I know that's Jerry's sort of his way of negotiating. I also know Zeke and his agent were not all that thrilled about hearing that sort of thing. But I guess the upside, Graham, is that Zeke has left Cabo, and he's back in the Metroplex. So that means, in theory, he's one step closer to being back on the field for the Cowboys. I mean, I feel like he still hasn't dropped that far, right? He's still hanging around in the top 5 right now.
Yeah, if I'm drafting today, I'm taking him as early as 3rd overall. I still remain staunch that a deal is going to get done here. And this is just like, it's every year. You know, Tony Pollard has looked great. I don't want to take that away from him, mm-hmm. but it's every single year where a rookie running back will just beast against second and third string defenders and make a couple guys miss, and everybody loses their mind. And this just happens to be, you know, a situation where Zeke has been out of camp. I'm still confident that I think he's going to play week one. Melvin Gordon is a whole nother discussion, though.
Yeah, I still don't think Melvin Gordon's going to be there, and I'm with you. I've believed this whole time that Zeke was going to be there, and sure. nothing has changed my mind on that. But it does beg the question, even with him coming back, would you still take a chance on Tony Pollard
yeah.
at the very end of a draft?
Absolutely. I think Pollard, he won't have standalone value because Zeke is going to play 75-85% of snaps right. once again. But Pollard has shown that he is now, for sure, their number two back. And Marcus, I mean, like, handcuffs are, I mean, we think we know what the handcuffs are most mm-hmm. of the time, but it usually ends up being the 3rd or 4th guy. I do feel comfortable saying Pollard is Zeke's true handcuff this year.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, if there's, and it's funny, I feel like every year we've been, because of circumstances, sort of looking for the handcuff. You know, like before, when we knew he was going to be suspended at some point, everybody was trying to figure out
right.
who was next in line. Now this year with the holdout sort of thing. But I think Tony Pollard over Alfred Morris sort of feels like the play right now. Quarterback news, well, more like Andrew Luck news. The Andrew Luck watch continues. And he warmed up before a game. He
yeah.
was on the field. He was warming up. And bad things didn't happen.
It looks like it feels like one of those things where it has been a little bit overblown. I know we talked about this on the show last week where we just kind of all stuck our noses up like, oh, Andrew Luck is hurt. Just don't take him.
Don't
draft him in the 8th or 9th round. Just wait and see where he falls. I'm still taking Luck around like QB6, QB7. But again, like, there's just so many great quarterbacks. I mean, we were just talking to Steven before the show, right? He said he had a draft, and he took Jared Goff over Luck, and he said,
in the 13th round.
Yeah, he said, should I regret that? And I said, no, honestly, no. I mean, Goff has been a fine QB1. If you're a little more afraid of Luck's health than I am, that's fine.
Yeah, I know over the weekend, talking to Mike Taglier, who we'll talk to in a little bit, he says he believes that Luck's going to be there for week one. He doesn't seem all that panicked, but you know, we'll get his thoughts when we talk to him in just a little bit, so you can kind of dive a little further into it. The one thing, the Colts say they do want to name a starter at quarterback by the 3rd preseason game. This feels like one of those like college camp battles where like the head coach is like, yeah, we're going to name a starter. And everybody's like, what are you doing? We know who it's going to be. So like, short of Andrew Luck, you know, getting his leg amputated, I'm pretty sure he's going to be their week one starter. Last bit of quarterback news. Matt Nagy says Mitch Trubisky is, quote, way past where he was in 2018 in terms of reading defenses. Graham, I know you and I saw the same video of him last week, a supercut of Mitch Trubisky trying to throw left, and it wasn't pretty.
he can't throw left.
It was not pretty. He's like Zoolander, right? I feel like the people are sort of all over the board with Mitch Trubisky. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you're feeling about him right now.
I'm buying Trubisky just for the environment, right? Like, I'm a believer in Matt Nagy. I'm a believer in all of their talent. And I'm a believer that they're going to be hyper-competitive in a lot of games. But Trubisky's accuracy really concerns me. And I think he's going to have some huge, huge spiked weeks, especially when he scrambles and kind of does some of the great things outside of structure that he can do.
Right.
But you've got to understand that he is going to be a pretty high-variance quarterback. And for that reason, I think he's going off the board behind guys like Phillip Rivers and maybe even Jimmy Garoppolo, just because I think drafters understand that he's going to have the spiked weeks, but he's also going to have some pretty low downside.
I mean, he's almost exclusively a streaming type quarterback. Like, I don't know that I can draft him.
In a 10 or 12 team league, there's really no reason. There's just so many other guys that you can have late. Like, Dak Prescott's going to go in the 13th, 14th round of your draft, and I'd just rather do that.
Yeah, no, it's funny, because I feel like every year there's so much Mitch Trubisky hype, and he's fine.
He's a great QB2 in Superflex.
I can see
he's
that.
He's a great,
absolutely.
If you get a stud quarterback in Super, not even a stud quarterback, but just a consistent guy like Phillip Rivers, and then you pair him with Mitch Trubisky where he can have those big spiked weeks when you can balance him out with someone who gets more consistent points. He's a great Superflex play for sure.
There you go. So, of course, we'll keep an eye on that as well. And all the peripherals around the Chicago Bears offense, because Trubisky certainly affects those guys as well. So there you go. That's pretty much everything you need to know.
That was the news.
Joining us on the phone right now, friend of the program and one of the really smart and good people in this fantasy football industry. You can read him over at Fantasy Pros. You can hear him on the Fantasy Pros podcast. You can find him on Twitter at Mike Taglier NFL. It's Mike Taglier. Tags, man. Appreciate you coming on. How you doing, man?
It's good, man. Long time no see.
I know.
I think I recall sitting next to you on a couch for like, I don't know, like 8 hours. Two days ago.
Yeah, exactly. You and I were both, for those who don't know, we were both in Canton, Ohio at the Hall of Fame for the second edition of the King's Classic drafts, the auction and the snake. And, it was a long, fun day that we had there at the Hall of Fame. And now that you've come out of it and you've had a couple of days to sort of to look over it, how are you feeling about your drafts there?
I'm feeling good, and I feel better about my auction league team than I do my snake draft team. And the reason I say that is because, going into a 14-team league, you have to assume there's going to be less chance to land studs on your team. You know, the positions dry up so fast. And I was really upset about my bench while there and thinking, like, man, my bench could have been better. But, I mean, in reality, it's really tough to walk away feeling good about a 14-team lineup and, with having multiple flex spots. So having a weak bench, I mean, I'm going to have to hit waivers and hope, hopefully I don't suffer any injuries, but I think in a 14-team league, you kind of have that no matter what.
So I've got my first of two main auction drafts. One is coming this weekend, the next is the following weekend. And I'm kind of looking for, listening both of your opinions. I haven't done an auction draft this year. Like, what did you guys notice in your league? I know it's a 14-team league. Yeah. That's a big league that typically people don't play in, but what did you notice?
I mean, Mike, you can correct me if I'm wrong. The thing I noticed is just how much value people placed on running backs. I know it kind of sort of became the running joke at the end of it that, I threw out CJ Anderson for $1 and it immediately jumped up to $3 and went to $4, and that's sort of where we are. But I think because there is such a big drop-off, Mike, it just feels like that there is a premium placed on trying to go out and maybe spending a little extra to get yourself a quality running back this year.
Absolutely. And it does depend on the size of the league as well. I mean, if you're in a 12 team, you don't have to panic as much, but in a 14 team, I felt like, it's like I wanted a few players in my lineup that I felt steady every single week. And, to spend up for guys like Alvin Kamara and Odell Beckham, I was willing to do that, but it's so odd to see. And it's like understanding the crowd that you're going to be in, because, you could be part of a group that devalues the running back position, that maybe a lot of people feel like they're going to go zero running back. It's feeling the room. And I think a lot of people go into an auction thinking, I'm going to nominate players I don't want and let people spend their money. But at the same time, you don't want to be left with all your money at the end and like sitting there and thinking, where did all the studs go? All of a sudden I have all this money, but there's no players to bid on. So sometimes it's the best thing to bid a player up front. And like, while people are a little bit tentative to spend their money, I think Dalvin Cook was one. I think he may have been the first player nominated in our auction. And he went for, it was $2 below value on my cheat sheet, but I'm not really big on Dalvin Cook. So I didn't feel like I didn't want to go and up the value of him, but he turned out to be one of the better values of the draft because, you know, someone did it before everybody started spending their money, because I think everybody is sitting back for the first few moments and trying to gauge the room.
Yeah, I think it's exactly what happened. I think he went for $34, and it really wasn't all that far off from some of like the big time studs or some of the other guys kind of in that range. He ended up being a great value. Outside of the draft, you and I talked, as we were sitting on the couch all afternoon, and one of the things you mentioned, Andrew Luck, who I know we've all sort of been kind of keeping an eye on, you feel like he's going to be there week one despite all the panic. I mean, please tell me that, you know, stabilize my feelings, because I've been big on him all offseason and I've sort of been wavering, but make me feel better about the fact that he will be there and be productive this year.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a calf injury. It has nothing to do with his throwing shoulder, nothing to do with the upper body, which makes me, like, panic less. You know, Andrew Luck, when he came back from his shoulder injury, he wasn't running the ball as much as he used to, and that's fine. You know, he has weapons in the passing game. They have a great offensive line. They protect him in the pocket now. But Andrew Luck, the reason is, like, it's a calf injury, guys. And, you know, we've seen running backs, you know, when a lot of doctors have talked about the picture that was released about Luck, and it looks like an ankle sprain. He's got it taped up, and they're like, That doesn't even look like a high ankle sprain where they have it taped. Even if it were a high ankle sprain, let's say it was, maybe he was overcompensating on that leg for, you know, because of the calf and he suffered an ankle sprain. That's fine. We've seen running backs come back from high ankle sprains in 2 to 3 weeks at times. So we know Andrew Luck's going to be dropping back to pass behind that offensive line. I think the Colts learned their lesson. I don't think they're promising anything with Andrew Luck, because if you recall, you know, just a couple of years ago, they're telling people Andrew Luck's going to be ready. He's going to play. And then they shut him down for the year. It's like Andrew Luck is going to play this year. I'm not panicking about him because it is an ankle injury. He could walk, if he were, you know, like we look at like guys like Phillip Rivers, he might as well not have any legs. You know what I mean? he's stuck in, he's taking his 3-step, 5-step drops, whatever he's doing. And he's like scanning the field. Andrew Luck has become more a pocket passer as he's, you know, progressed in his career. And knowing that offensive line is as good as they are, I'm not too concerned about it.
I'm with you on this, Tags. I think we can drop him safely down our rankings, like maybe a few spots, just based on.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the guy that's like overly optimistic about injuries in my league for sure. But I'm definitely with you. Like, I'm not going to let him fall past like the 9th or 10th round in my leagues, because he can play behind this offensive line at like 85% or 90% on his. You know, this is a left leg injury too, so it's not like he's, getting his power from his right leg on his throwing side. I'm with you on that. I don't think I'm letting him too far down the board.
I think some of us in industry leagues, you know, we talk about like quarterback being values, but in like an actual, like, you know, home leagues, you know, 90% of the leagues out there, a lot of guys, they take quarterbacks earlier than I'm going to.
Yes.
Anyway, so Andrew Luck is usually never on the board when I consider him.
Yeah. I was reading through your list of sleepers for this year. And I know the term sleeper has become nebulous because we talk about so many guys, but you actually pinpointed some guys that are really late round, in a lot of cases not even being drafted. And one name jumped out at me when I read your list. Is this finally the year for Devontae Parker? Does it finally happen this year?
I think it's possible. You know, it's really rare to find a guy that's being taken. He's essentially being undrafted. He's like, his average ADP right now is 200 overall, and he's a guy that he comes with 120 target potential. You know, Adam Gase leaves the team. Everybody expects the Dolphins to move on from Devontae Parker. Like, I think that I was aboard that, so I was like, okay, it seems like the team is ready to move on. They're not going to take the option. The first thing they did when Adam Gase left was they extended Devontae Parker. It kind of tells me it's like I think Gase held a grudge against Parker. It was similar in a way to Jay Ajayi. And maybe they weren't able to trade Parker last season. But like before the 2018 season, the stat I had on Parker, he had played 36 career games. In those games, he was a wide receiver 3 or better 53% of the time. Mm-hmm. When you do, people are like, well, what does that compare to, Mike? Tyler Boyd in 2018 was a wide receiver 3 or better 57% of the time. So why are we judging Devontae Parker based on Adam Gase? The reason that I'm moving Robbie Anderson down my board. The reason I'm moving Le'Veon Bell down my board is because I don't believe in Adam Gase. I'm not saying that Brian Flores is a guy that I want to attach myself to, but knowing that Ryan Fitzpatrick looks like he has the leg up on the starting job, I want to attach myself to that quarterback, because Ryan Fitzpatrick, you guys know, he's straight up DGAF. He's basically a Jay Cutler-esque quarterback, where he's willing to throw it up into one-on-one coverage. And Devontae Parker was drafted as a guy that's 6'3", you know, over 220 pounds, should be able to win those one-on-one situations. So, I mean, it's hard for me to say that they're going to be able to run the ball with Kalen Ballage. So I think 120 targets are in the realm of possibilities. I'm not projecting that. But he should be the top target there. So, and knowing his draft cost, it's like a risk reward thing. And watch week one, and if it doesn't pan out, you didn't spend anything to get him, so drop him.
You know, you actually mentioned in that explanation kind of a quick little thing too. You mentioned Kalen Ballage, and this was a guy that, you know, a couple of months ago when I started drafting, I was taking him at the end of drafts just kind of as a dart throw or whatever. The hype has come so much that now he's moved up, that, you know, he's gone from being a 14th round pick to like a 9th round pick in a lot of situations. And I think, Mike, we're overlooking the fact that the Dolphins are still going to be a bad team, that no matter how much we're hyping Kalen Ballage, they're going to be a bad football team. And so, you know, I just think we've gone too far in the other direction for Ballage, and maybe we are overlooking what Devontae Parker could be.
I absolutely agree. I mean, if anybody watched Kalen Ballage and Kenyon Drake play football last year, you could see which one was the better running back, and it's not even close. You know, talent does win in the NFL, and Brian Flores, you know, there might be more of the story in Miami than I know. Maybe off-the-field things. But what I do know is that on the field, Kenyon Drake's a superior running back. And if he wants to win football games, Kenyon Drake's going to be playing more of the snaps. Kalen Ballage is a guy that, you know, when you have a player that could not start in the collegiate level, it's a warning sign for me. You know, like, mm-hmm. Kalen Ballage, I watched his film, and, like, is he a size, speed specimen? Absolutely. I think some of his best attributes were actually in the passing game. And knowing that Kenyon Drake was one of the best receiving backs in football last year, it just moves him down my board. But unfortunately, this just seems like an ugly timeshare. So first off, you mentioned it. It's an ugly offense with an ugly offensive line. They have like one starting caliber offensive lineman there, and it's Laramie Tunsil. But he's over at left tackle. He's more of like a pass protector than he is a run blocker. So, and you know, when you combine the fact that it's a bad offensive line and a bad offense, and it's an ugly timeshare between these two, I'm just avoiding them both. I don't think that you're going to say, I drafted Kalen Ballage, and he brought me to a fantasy championship. That's basically what you're searching for when you get to that 10th round area. I would much rather take someone like an Anthony Miller, who has breakout potential written all over him, or even a Ronald Jones. I know Ronald Jones is considered a bust, but guys, Bruce Arians coming in there is going to change things. Understand that no running back, like not just Ronald Jones, no running back under Dirk Cutter in Tampa Bay finished inside the top 30 in fantasy points per game. So, again, why are we basing our opinion on Ronald Jones based on 30 career touches?
Yeah, Marcus and I have been on record on this podcast all summer saying we don't want Dolphins and never Dolphins. And it kind of seems like now, especially with Kenyon Drake, now he has this kind of lingering foot issue that we're not entirely sure about. It's very likely. I don't think many people are going to have, like, we're not going to be relying on Dolphins in our fantasy lineups probably early in the season.
Last little bit for you. We always appreciate the time, Mike. You know, obviously, we still got a couple weeks left of the preseason, and I know everybody sort of watches these games differently. For you, when you sit down and you watch preseason football, what specifically, what sort of things are you looking for? Do you suggest people keep an eye out for when they watch these games?
It's really who's getting snaps with the starters. You know, like Patrick Mahomes is going to probably play, you know, maybe a quarter and a half, and it's like you want to see if Darwin Thompson is going to get more time with the ones after showing out. You know, Tony Pollard being on the field with Dak Prescott, I was hesitant to believe that he was the direct handcuff to Ezekiel Elliott, but it seems like Jerry Jones and that coaching staff believes in him. But, you know, some of the things that people are missing here is like a guy like Mitch Trubisky. We've heard a lot of things out of camp about how, oh, he's struggling and, you know, he's throwing interceptions. And, you know, taking a page, I'm not saying he's Aaron Rodgers, but Aaron Rodgers says if you're not throwing picks in practice, you're not doing something right. Because basically that's the time where you should be, you know, experimenting what you can and cannot do. I believe Matt Nagy's a smart coach. And basically, if Mitch Trubisky was having that much issue, he would be out there in the preseason more. He hasn't thrown a single pass in the preseason yet. And that is more of a – so instead of taking a word from maybe a beat reporter, it's like reading in between the tea leaves and saying, if Matt Nagy was really uncomfortable with Trubisky, if he looked that bad, why isn't he playing throughout the preseason? So – basically, that's the stuff I look for, and getting running backs on the field with the starters, because whether they're a young running back, or it's like, you know, under Mike McCarthy, pass protection was obviously a big thing. I don't think some coach value that too much, but if they do, you obviously want to see them out there with the starters. So behind them, it's just a bunch of guys fighting for depth, but getting on the field with the starters is definitely a step in the right direction.
If throwing picks in practice means you're doing something right, then Jimmy Garoppolo's my new QB1.
Five in a row.
Hey, Mike, we appreciate it as always. For the folks out there listening, you can find him on Twitter at Mike Taglier NFL. You can find him at Fantasy Pros on the Fantasy Pros podcast. Hey, be well. We'll be in touch, and best of luck this season, man.
Thanks, guys. It was good talking with you.
All right, take
Thanks,
care.
Tags.
Thanks to Mike Tagliere for his time. I always appreciate chatting with Tags. You can find him over at Fantasy Pros. Go check him out if you haven't already. So we go from one Mike to another Mike, from Mike Tagliere to Mike Florio, our famous researcher. Welcome back, man. First of all, welcome back for another season.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for that. And I definitely can't follow up Tags, so.
I don't know, man. Like, you know, don't sell yourself short. You recently wrote for us on NFL.com a kind of a roundup or a preview of slot receivers. It was a thing you did last year, writing about slot receivers. They are all the rage. They're the new hotness across fantasy and in fantasy football. So you went and you broke down each team's leading slot receiver from last year with an outlook about who that person could be this year. So why don't you just kind of pick your brain about a few of these things. The first one, because everybody loves the Arizona Cardinals offense, they may go four wide receivers a lot this year, which potentially means two slot guys if we're really looking at it. Last year it was Larry Fitzgerald. Is there somebody you see being maybe a consistent slot receiver in Arizona this year?
I still think it's Larry Fitzgerald as the top slot receiver, but we've seen Christian Kirk also operate out of the slot a lot this preseason. And last year, Fitzgerald ran 24.5 slot routes per game to just 7 out wide. And Kirk only ran about 8 per game. So I do think Kirk can improve on that number, but I don't think at, you know, his escalated age, they're all of a sudden going to ask Larry Fitzgerald to change who he is. But I think there is enough volume for both, because that's going to be an offense that we expect at least to run a lot of plays per game, definitely a lot more than they did last year. So I think there is room for both Kirk and Fitzgerald to operate in the slot this year.
Over to Chicago, Anthony Miller wasn't great. I mean, there's a lot of expectations for him. Are we overlooking him? Because I feel like we're not talking about Anthony Miller a lot right now.
Yeah, I think we are. Not that he should be, you know, drafted as a wide receiver that you want to get in your lineup every week, but it's also easy to forget that last year he was a rookie who was dealing with a shoulder injury all year long. I think the report said like it popped out of it like 5 times throughout the season. So yeah, that has to be painful. Plus Mitch Trubisky missed time last year, but even with all that, Anthony Miller grew as a wide receiver, especially from the slot last year. He finished the year averaging 3.6 PPR points per catch. But from week 10 on, that number jumped almost a full point to 4.42, showing you just how much he was developing in his rookie season. And you would expect that another year in this offense, it was a new offense both for him and Mitch Trubisky last year. You would think that as they both continue to get a little bit more comfortable, that there's better numbers to come this year.
I went back and looked to last year. Mitchell Trubisky was actually better at targeting his slot receivers, like in terms of his performances. His YPA spiked, quarterback rating spiked. If we go back and look at some of his tape at UNC, he heavily targeted Ryan Switzer, their primary slot receiver at UNC. So Trubisky has been, throughout his very short career as a passer, he's been one that likes to target the slot receiver. And Anthony Miller is a fantastic pick in the 10th, 11th round for those reasons. Unfortunately, he's dealing with that little bit of an ankle injury. It's kind of keeping his price suppressed. So maybe we can get a little bit more, a little bit cheap Miller shares.
There's value to be had there. And Trubisky last year, just under 10 passes per game to the slot. So there's going to be volume going that way.
Nice.
So this one, I'm going to throw out to the room, and you guys can kind of both weigh in on this because I'm very curious. The Rams are good about moving their people around. Is there somebody on this roster, whether it's Kupp, Woods, Cooks, that you see as maybe being a primary slot receiver in that offense?
I don't know if we're going to see just one guy operate exclusively out of the slot, because last year in the 8 games that all 3 played, all 3 did see some time in the slot, but Cooper Kupp was the guy who saw the most time out of the slot. Last year, when the 8 games that all 3 played, he averaged just under 17 slot routes per game, whereas Woods was 11.8 and Cooks was 10.4. And I think it's worth mentioning that in those 8 games, Kupp led them in slot targets, receptions, receiving yards, and touchdowns. So McVay is a genius. I think he's going to move these guys around and get the most out of all 3 of them. But I think Cooper Kupp will be the one doing the prime most of the damage out of the slot for the Rams.
Kupp is a guy that I've like come like full circle on like 3 times this summer. where are you taking him? Because I've taken him as early as like the 20th receiver, and I've forgotten him as late as like the 30th.
Yeah, I like him as a lower end WR2, and it's crazy to say that I have all 3 Rams ranked as a wide receiver 2 this year, but I do. And he is the one I have the lowest just because he's going the cheapest. He's coming off the injury and such, but I think because he's the cheapest of the 3, he has the chance to return the most value. And I have been taking him, though, as a low end WR2.
I'm with you on that because I've got Cooks at 16, Woods at 17, and then Kupp at receiver 21. But I've had Kupp in so many different spots in my ranks just because there's so many good receivers in that range. But now that I guess he's fully healthy, it's kind of becoming a good value spot, especially in PPR leagues.
The one thing I will say about the Rams is that, and it pleasantly surprised me, is that I think people have sort of, they haven't gone crazy. I really felt like this would be a year that Robert Woods was overdrafted based on what happened last year and that people would forget about Cooper Kupp. But it seems like everybody sort of remembered who Cooper Kupp was, and I think it's sort of kept all of their draft prices fairly reasonable. So I think everybody sort of feels that way, that they're sort of all wide receiver twos this year. They're all, the chance to be productive. But I also feel like we haven't gone too far overboard on drafting any one of those guys.
I think Cooks is my favorite this year, though. So year two in this offense. Mm-hmm. Cooper Kupp's probably not going to be 100% healthy. I think Cooks could have a huge ceiling year this
year.
Plus,
Brandon Cooks actually gets to stay on the same team for 2 years in a row, right? Like, yes. That's kind of a new thing.
It's a gorgeous spot for
him. All right, Florio. Jarvis Landry in 2019, right? I mean, they've added Odell Beckham. People are expecting, David Njoku to take a step forward. Nick Chubb's going to take a step forward. Are you looking at his 2019 being better, worse, or about the same as what we saw from him last year?
I think it'll be about the same, but I think he'll go a different route to take it. I think Jarvis Landry on the football field this year will be better than he was last year. I think he will be a more efficient receiver. I just worry with Odell there. Odell is going to see his fair share of targets, we know. I worry about the volume decreasing for Landry, but I don't think people realize he finished last year WR18 in PPR leagues. So he was a top 20 guy there. Plus, I don't think people factor in that he had a quarterback change midseason and then had a coaching change midseason. So that's a lot to have to digest on the fly as well. Plus, last year he was used very differently, especially after Freddie Kitchens took over. He was used a lot more out wide than in previous years being used in the slot. And the slot is where you want Jarvis Landry to live. And because of that, I think his efficiency is going to increase this year. Like last year, he had more air yards than any year in his career, as far back as we could track. But he had the fewest receiving yards since his rookie season. So it showed you that he was getting opportunity there, but it wasn't really where he can make his bread and butter like he can in the slot. So while I think his targets may dip a bit with Odell being there, I think his efficiency is going to increase. Yeah. He had the career low catch rate last year too. I think that's going to spike him being more comfortable playing in the slot. And Baker Mayfield threw 10.7 passes per game to the slot last year. So I do think there will still be volume there. I have Landry in PPR as a top 24 wide receiver, and I don't think a lot of people feel comfortable taking him there.
I don't have him as a top 24 receiver, but I have kind of moved Landry up in my ranks for that reason. The Duke Johnson trade is sneaky valuable, too, for Landry because some of those underneath targets that were going to go to Duke Johnson, even though there were just a few per game, they're going to go back to Landry, which I think is a huge boon for his value. And you mentioned that they were targeting him deeper downfield last year. That's true. And maybe with Beckham in the lineup, that he'll go back to that kind of lower A-dot, those lower A-dot targets in the shorter part of the field where he can just hoover, like 80 to 90 receptions.
And that's actually what I fully expect from him. I think we'll see a lot of Odell out wide. I think we'll see Higgins and eventually Callaway maybe on the other side. Yeah. And Landry will get to operate out of the slot, which is why we loved him in Miami, because it was those...
It's the right fit.
Those low, short down the field passes, but high, completion rate on those passes. So lots of volume.
All right, I'm going to put you on the spot right here. You got to pick one of these three guys, right? Where are you going? Danny Amendola, Golden Tate, or Cole Beasley?
I think I would go Golden Tate because I think when he is back from suspension, he has the highest per game ceiling of any of those guys. But with the suspension there, him and Cole Beasley are pretty close to me. I don't really want Danny Amendola. I'm staying away from all lines this year, but except for like the running game and stuff. But yeah, I think those two are the close, but I think Tate on a per-week basis will be better.
If I swapped out Dan Amendola for, like, Nelson Aguilar, is that the...
I like Aguilar. I feel like there's a lot of question marks around him the Eagles are going to use their receivers.
so many receivers there. I mean, they've got D-Jax. We're expecting Dallas Goedert to see a few more looks this year. There's just so many receivers in their kitchen there.
Yeah.
Should be fun. Are you writing slot receivers all year for us this year?
That is the plan,
Sweet. Awesome. Yeah, so check them out every week. You can find it at NFL.com. Mike Florio writing about slot receivers. Get in on this. So as we wrap up, I always like to do something fun. So you're here. Hopefully you can hang out and we'll talk. Because I saw this the other day. We're approaching pumpkin spice season. Anybody who knows me knows that it just drives me insane because I think pumpkin is sweet potato's bland cousin. But People seem to love it. That's fine. So I saw that they are introducing pumpkin spice spam for this year.
I don't understand this.
So it made me come up with this idea of like, of would you, right? Like the pumpkin spice edition of would you. So I went and they looked at all these different products, food and otherwise, that apparently are going to have pumpkin spice versions. And so I'm going to run through these and you guys can give me a hell yes, a hell no, or maybe I'd give it a shot, right? So, I mean, let's just start. The pumpkin spice spam. How are we feeling about this?
No.
Hell no. Yeah, like I don't even eat regular spam.
Exactly. I know, right? Like spam is never on my grocery list. Like, do people still put spam on their grocery list?
I mean, in Hawaii. It's huge in Hawaii.
Okay.
That's yeah.
Sorry, Hawaiians. I didn't mean to disparage your spam.
Hey, look, man. I'm guessing they don't eat pumpkin spice spam in Honolulu. That's just the thought. Pumpkin spice. I saw there's pumpkin spice like body wash and soap. See, so are you willing to go outside smelling like a pumpkin
pie? See, now I have the purview of seeing your list. This is the only one I think on your list that I would say yes to, just because it's an obvious one, right? I mean, you can maybe smell like pumpkins if that's your thing. Now for me,
yes,
I don't particularly want to. Yeah, but
I wouldn't want to go out outside of maybe like Halloween day. I wouldn't want to ever walk around smelling like a pumpkin.
I mean, I feel like if your significant other is one who appreciates the pumpkin spice latte, sure, like at Starbucks, then maybe that's something you do.
That is my fiance's favorite drink, so maybe I'll take. Maybe
you should try it. Yeah, there you go. I saw a pumpkin spice protein powder for like, you know, when you want to get gains, but you also want to remember that it's Thanksgiving too. Like,
it just sounds gross. Like most protein powders are gross anyway. Right? And pumpkin spice doesn't make it sound like it's any more appetizing.
Yeah, I'll stick to like chocolate or something. Like
right? Cookies and cream are sneaky good too sometimes.
I've heard that before. Yeah.
All right. I like pasta. I don't know how I feel about pumpkin spice fettuccine.
I'm out on it.
That makes no sense to me.
I had cinnamon flavored pasta once and it was pretty awful.
That sounds
sauce
awful.
And yeah, so I'll stay away from pumpkin.
Wait, so was it cinnamon powder or was it like?
It was, we didn't know and we made pasta and it was cinnamon flavored and it tasted gross.
Especially if you put sauce and stuff
yeah.
on it, right?
Oof. That sounds brutal.
That sounds good.
I was at someone's house and I had to pretend I liked it, but it was pretty terrible.
Never heard that.
Last one, I guess. Pumpkin spice Pringles are going to be a thing this year.
I don't know, man. People are into weird flavored chips, so yeah. I think I could see this. But for me personally, I don't want it because I'm with you. Like the pumpkin spice fad is just
it's overboard.
It's bizarre to me.
It's I feel like
it doesn't taste particularly good either. I mean,
my argument: people don't actually like pumpkin. They like nutmeg and cinnamon. Like that's what it is, right?
Yeah.
Like that's what it is.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, the Pringles sound definitely like something where I would buy it, eat one, and then never eat the rest.
That's
but
how
I just
I
have
feel.
To try it.
Yeah. I would try one, and then that would kind of be it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
there you go. I appreciate you guys sitting in, hanging in with us. Appreciate Florio stopping by. Thanks to Mike Tagliere for stopping by as well. Before we get out of here, a reminder, our live show is coming a week from today, actually. Monday, August 26th, for those of you in Southern California, we'll be at the Yard House in Marina Del Rey, 8 o'clock in the evening there. We'll do a pod, we'll do some Q&A afterwards. We'll have some spots open for our listener league and we'll make you do stupid human tricks to try to get in the league. It'll be fun. If you buy us a beer, maybe you just slide in a little bit easier. Who knows? Anyway, that's it. We are done. We appreciate you listening and downloading as always. You know the drill. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, mosquitoes are like family. They're annoying, but they carry your blood. We'll see you on Wednesday.